Hi Simon, Claire Phelan, Town of Port Hedland, how are you?
Yeah, thank you. How are you?
Well, thank you. So we've got you on speakerphone at our Audit and Finance Committee meeting. In the room we've got a range of Town of Port Hedland staff along with our committee members, community member Bill Rambanis, Mayor Kelly Howlett and presiding member Councillor Gloria Jacobs. We are struggling a little bit with technology on loudspeaker for iPhone, and if you could just speak up, and we'll endeavour to speak up as well, and let us know if you have any problems hearing us.
Can you hear me quite clearly now?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, thanks. Simon?
Fantastic. Well, thank you all for having us. You happy for me to take it from you, Claire?
Absolutely.
First of all, I just wanted to let everyone know that Michael's able to attend today's meeting. He's got a family matter to attend, so it'll just be a matter of mine today. What I propose doing is, Claire, can you confirm to me, I saw in the pack that Jessica sent me that you have provided a copy of our report, our key information memorandum?
Correct.
Yes, Simon, it's item 10.3 in our agenda. So it's on page 105 for anybody that would like to.
So what I intend to do is I actually held the City of Karratha meeting last week as well. I'll take a similar format where I think what we'll do is walk through that key information memorandum, and then once I've walked through, then I'm open to take the questions if that works for everyone.
Sure, that's great, Simon.
Fantastic. Okay. Before we get the start of the report, certainly I'll make comment on something we used in report back on the 8th of October. Subsequently, obviously, the report has now been signed off, and as you can see, there's an unqualified audit report attached to the financial statements. This report was written at the point in time in the context that once we receive the signed statements, we would issue an unqualified report. So I think we'll make that call to the committee that there's no changes from the date that we actually issued this report. If we move into the executive summary on page 2, that just talks through the scope, the materiality, and a couple of the high-level items of the audit. As we go through this report, it will take on more context because we go through some of these items in more detail. On page 4, this is where we start our key findings analysis. At the planning stage of the audit, which occurs roughly back in May, June each year for each of our local governments, we obviously set aside key risks and talk about what a strategy. You can see on the first one on the key findings there, PPE, which is your public place equipment and the infrastructure assets. No doubt they are the highest balances on your balance sheet and the most material. As you can see, I think they make up about $350 million of your $440 million assets. So we obviously undertook significant work in the digital area. But generally, for the North Water competitors, we've gone through all additions on a sample basis, looking at items that have been capitalised throughout the year. Also, then on top of that, this year we've had the fair valuing of the Atlantic buildings as part of the stage two of implementation. That then was where a lot of our work was centered on this year. It was made somewhat easier in the sense that we had an external valuer providing a valuation report on those. For those on the committee and the finance team, you know there was a significant uplift in the fair value. I think it resulted in about a $71 million revaluation of land and upwards and buildings. That doesn't take us by too great a surprise because just for the context as well, a lot of local governments, which is in those regional centres, have had similar results. So all in all, you can see from our resolution recommendations and the work performed, we were happy with the balances contained. We didn't find any evidence of any material mistakes. The fair value of the land and buildings was well done by the team. Moving forward, there's obviously going to be the challenge next year where we've got the large infrastructure assets. They're going to be the final stage of the fair valuing, so there's going to be a fair bit of work that the team need to undertake there. And given the nature of the assets, I mean, from a organisations as opposed to doing work from external valuers, etc. And so therefore, I should also point out that next year there will obviously be a bit more increased audit scope in that regard, because when you're relying on work from an external valuer, it makes it a lot easier from an audit perspective. When you're relying on internal valuers, you've got to do a bit more work on the auditing exams to gain comfort around the competency of the expert being utilised. The next key risk area was the rates, grants and subsidies revenues, consistent with last year. Again, a lot of the driving of income for the town of Queensland is derived from rates and federal charges and the grants that we do receive. So we've done significant work again on the income streams. Again, from the work that we've performed, we haven't found any evidence of any material statements of comfortable with that. The work that we did do, we focused on analytical procedures, looking at comparisons to the prior year, gaining insights as to any significant lifts, substantively testing particularly some items like the grant income, because we also double up in terms of doing acquittals for those. So one side in the sense that we do the substantive testing on those balances, and particularly we do a lot of emphasis on cut-off testing to make sure that revenue is recognised in the correct reporting period. The next risk that we want to go on to is the employee cost and employee benefits provisions. Employee costs make up over about, I think, usually about 30 to 40% of the expenditure that goes out of local governments. Clearly, there's a lot of employees, so we do a lot of testing around the employees on a sample size basis, not just also from the expenditure side on the comprehensive income, but also in the provisions to make sure that the annual and long service leave balances are stated accurately. As you'll see on the coming pages, the only item to note there is that we did find a small minor issue where there was no accrual done up until the reporting date of 30 June. However, as I'll detail on the next page, it's quite immaterial. And it should also be noted that no accrual has been made in the past, so any net effect would be quite nominal year on year. In essence, it will fluctuate from some years where the end of the pay period might actually finish off the end of June, so it would be 100% accurately recorded. Some years it could be as great as 9 to 10 days. Claire made a great point to me when trying to file out the order, but in the sense of saying, well, there is 52 weeks in the year, we've recorded 52 days. So we're comfortable there is no material misstatement. It's just more of a techy financial reporting matter. Page 6 talks about our order differences. You can see there the employee costs. The accrual for those final 4 business days of the year, so I think the last pay run might have been run on about the 26th of June, just working backwards there, and the total dollar effect of that is $323,000. And again, it's clearly not material to the financial status of the organisation. Moving from there, disclosure deficiencies. We've actually undertaken a detailed review of the financial report. We note this year that the town has moved to a new template of financial statements. Must also take the time to comment that I'm significantly impressed with the model and the style of the template. And to be honest, the amount of review and number of changes and number of versions of the financial statements that my team have to believe from all reports that this is by far and away the best audit that we've been through and most organised and efficient. And I think the committee will take note that if you go back a couple of years ago, that the audit was signed off in February. Last year might have been, I think, off the top of my head, maybe in December. We're in a position where we can issue clearance for signing off in October, so I think it's necessarily effort from those involved. Compliance with laws and regulations and accounting policies are going concern, and they're on standard reporting matters, no issues there, and I think that's been no disagreement with management throughout the course of the audit. Finally, I'd just like to confirm the grant form is independent, other than signing off the grant equivalents, we don't perform any other service. The organisation, we have in past years done the standard financial management reviews for the CEO. I think that might have been done from memory again, maybe in 2012 or 2013. So that will be coming up in due course because there's a requirement to have those done. So I'm sure that will come up in 2015 or 2016. Section 5 talks about the current and future financial audit requirements. I don't intend to bore you with accounting talk, but there's very minimal impacts in terms of the joint arrangements because you've only got four one in place at the moment. The big one to note is obviously AASB 13, their value. You guys, being a local government, obviously get to have a staged implementation in that regard, as opposed to external organisations who have to implemented by this point in time. So as I said, if the mining for section 2, you're going to have the requirement to finalise up and complete the infrastructure assets next year. Section 6 talks about management letter points. Just for the benefit of any of these not major issues, it's just more issues that we bring to your attention if we felt that see the hierarchy and descriptions, material and deficiency. James Ivins noted this year about deficiencies, which if you actually look at the definitions on the previous page 14, clearly states that they're just housekeeping or administrative matters that represent a lot of risk, but it should be rectified in 15 years. First one, obviously there's an excessive number of the chartered accounts. Excessive for my government as well, it should be noted. I understand the charter of accounts. I do quite a few local government audits, and they are quite long and tedious, and I'm sure the internal finance team probably feel that way. So we recommend that the charter of accounts be reconciled so it's not cumbersome for its users, and so moving forward and make it easier on the finance team, particularly if there is any transition and reinvestation and finance division, making it easy for everyone. Management have obviously responded and said that they're looking at that, and it's going to be rebuilt in the next financial year that we're in at the moment. Finally, the other one that we noted was a small housekeeping issue around the leave application forms for one of the employees that we selected in our family. No major issue there in the sense that we're sure that the leave was approved, etc. It's just a case of the institute of finding national leave, etc. So all we've recommended is just making sure that your HR teams and your payrolls and stuff are obtaining all those forms and just making sure they're all on file and kept. Typically, some strong audit evidence when that work's been performed in future years. Point two, you can see there's a number of issues raised in previous years. All of them have been closed off. I don't intend to go through it, but I think that's another positive reflection of the fact that the finance team in place this year have done a great work in terms of improving the culture and the financial reporting aspect. So what I'll do now is obviously open it up for questions. If there are questions clear, it'd be great if you can maybe move the phone a little bit closer to that person speaking, just so I can get the questions open.
Of course. Sure, Simon. What we might do is we might go around the table to members, and then we'll send the little handset over to where there may be questions around. So, Minister, Kelly Howlett.
My only comment is and maybe it's really outside the scope, but just seeing more of the improvements, the process improvements and suggestions. I guess I just feel that, you know, you could have suggested more, but I guess it's probably outside your scope.
Yeah. Is it Kelly, is it?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, so I think the audit process looks at internal control to a certain degree. It doesn't give you the overall comfort of what a internal control review, which is a specific audit, specific engagement, will give you. I know that I've met now previously within the last 18 months and it explains the fact that internal control reviews have a specific focus on, say, some particular sites, which is probably bring out some more recommendation improvements. The items that we identify from our external audit are matters that come for our attention through the testing that we perform purely on the financial statements, because our ultimate role is to make sure that the financial statements give a true and fair position of the results of the organisation. It doesn't go down to the minute
particular
control.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yep, no, thank you.
Cool. Kel,
anything else?
No.
Bill?
I have no questions.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. I've got a few things that I just wanted to throw in and also question, I suppose. And firstly, I guess to start, Simon, I would also recognise the efforts of the staff, especially the finance and corporate services, led by Claire and Peter and their team. They've produced something that's, as you said, has set a new bar to the way we present accountable and transparent financial positions to the community. So great job, you guys. I think you can't understate the amount of work and considerable effort that you guys have got done to produce these on time and at a rate where the auditors picked up very minimal things to work on. So congratulations to you and your team, and thank you very much to the town and the community at large. So well done. Okay, so I guess the first thing I wanted to ask is, one of the internal controls that I was thinking that we might want to consider is having an audit register. So from your recommendations and some of the things that I highlighted, I was wondering if perhaps as part of the committee's role, we could have a register of what the, you know, how things are going. So whereas you're saying we recommend that the management put in place a detailed plan to with regards to infrastructure, maybe we just get at every committee meeting just an update on the status of what we are doing. So that's one of the recommendations. We've got a couple of other recommendations here. You know, we'd be looking at let's say page even down the back here. So it's just, I guess, looking at the deficiency reports here, just seeing where they are, so especially some of them that might involve implementations of policies, or just so that we as the committee members can keep a track and ask the questions and make sure that they are being attended to. So I'd like to, I don't know if that needs a motion or what it needs, but if that can be, we can attend to that.
Through the chair, look, I'm happy to complete that as a standing item for the audit and right. finance committee. One of the things that I have done previously is review audit reports for the preceding 5 or 6 years to see if there are any common themes coming through, as well as the financial management review, which is that focus on your internal control. So I'm happy to collect all that information and provide a status report on cool. where we're at. Yeah.
So one would assume that as they get completed, that report actually gets more. Or it gets, you know, you add things that you feel that might be required.
On top of the formal auditor's report, we've got a series of internal controls and process improvement program in place, which is all around making sure that we've got the right controls, the right checks and balances are going all through the financial year, which makes the end of year financial reporting process so much easier. So Peter, in his role as CFO, is leading that process with the team, and that's seen some really significant turnaround in terms of the timeliness and quality of our internal checks and balances throughout the course of the financial year.
So it would also include in part of that register is the chart of accounts. So you know how we're going with the updating on that, because I do notice that the recommendation there is to have a look at that, and the response is that it's been undertaken. So if we sort of understand that that's been attended to, that's another recommendation, so things like that. The other thing that I wanted to ask was, what does AASB 19, again, what does AASB stand for? Is that Accounting and Audit Standards Board?
Australian
Accounting Standards Board. So fundamentally, that body is the one that guides the standards of which we then interpret and report. So your financial report of the organisation has to comply with the accounting standards issued under the AASB. Don't want to go too in depth, but that AASB is guided by an international body as well. So the Australian Accounting Standards are just basically adapted from an international reporting framework.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Simon. Now, you mentioned in here that we've got a JV. Which one is it? And who is it with?
We have the joint venture arrangement from many, many years ago in relation to the Port Hedland Retirement Village. And the arrangements around the ownership of the land, ownership of the building, and the revenue streams.
So is that the one that we're not sure whether DHW does maintenance on? So if we own it, doesn't that mean that we...
We have part arrangements with it, and there is a deed of agreement covering the joint venture and the proportional split along those. The joint venture was supposed to expire in line with the lease. The lease has been out of date for many, many, many years. We've commenced discussions with Department of Housing about what that may look like into the longer term.
Cool. So that would be something that would be on the
register as well.
Fantastic. Just with some of the stuff that was completed, Simon, I'm just in particular from last year's, the current year's issue is not a problem. The one that in particular that I wanted to sort of inquire about is some of the stuff from last year. And one of them was on page 16, 16 being the lease. The last item, last paragraph, around the receivables and some that are greater than 2 years and policy, you know, where the recommendation is policy and procedures should be implemented for correct collection and write-downs of outstanding debts. Can we have an update? Or do we have any, you know, can that be added to what you're talking about as well?
That's
really...
I'll give you my oversight from the next level of perspective, but I'm sure we'll manage
Simon, and look, I certainly can confirm that we have identified provision for doubtful debts of $310,000, so that's an itemised listing, and I do review that listing periodically. So under our new sundry and debt collection policy, we will be presenting a schedule of write-offs to the council on a quarterly basis, based on those amounts deemed to be unrecoverable. We of course provide the 90-day debtors report as part of the monthly financial report, and we've since updated that report to identify whether the receivable relates to the airport business unit or landfill business unit. Approximately 80% of our 90-plus day debtors relate to those business units. We have a couple of big ones that we're working on recovery on at the moment. And under our new debt collection policy, which has been presented to council, that does provide first stop credit for landfill customers after 42 days. So our team has done some terrific work as far as internal mechanisms for the monitoring of outstanding debts. And you know, we've got a robust framework in place now, so we should see that that come down over the next 12 months.
So just at a committee level, should this committee see some of those extended outstanding, just so that we can get an idea, especially if they're attributable to the two business units of the airport and the landfill, because I'm really conscious about the airport in particular and some of the challenges there. So it would be nice to know that there is a process that's happening and that they're being attended to, because some of those stretch out 2 years plus.
So through the chair, those are presented to council each month, yeah, and naturally form part of the business paper for the Audit and Finance Committee on a quarterly basis in conjunction with the quarterly budget review. If you were looking for some more detail around those, we can certainly provide that.
I guess not so much to create more work, but just a quick look at how those numbers might be reducing or increasing, God help us.
Yeah, through the chair, with the work that's been done internally, we'll now be retaining or keeping a register all legal action and referrals to debt collectors for age receivables, so at any point in time we can actually identify what the current status of debt recovery action is. So it would be pretty easy to provide that information to council under confidential cover.
That's fine. So I mean, that's about all I had, other than the last thing was the grants register and just whether we shouldn't be keeping a track on how that's been reconciled back. Is that, what's the status of that, or your thoughts on that?
My gut view is that the grants committee doesn't probably need to get down to the detail of that particular area. I think it's just more of a nicety with the management to develop a grant register, because as you can imagine, under acquittal reporting, there is reporting requirements. I think if you go back, I don't like referring too much to the past, but the distances in the prior audits that we're getting called up a couple of weeks and saying, actually, if we just figured out this acquittal needs to be signed on, can we get it done? If you fast forward to this year, very transparent, bearing up front, really.
I guess what I want to ensure is that the process is there to ensure that it doesn't fall back, because when you look at the previous year and you talk about 200 non-acquittals, that's a bloody dunload. So you just want to make sure that the process is in place that that doesn't occur.
Through the chair, we're currently reviewing our arrangements and resource allocation for all aspects of grant administration, not just the accounting, but making sure that we've got all milestones and high-level summaries and so forth mapped out. There have been significant improvements over the last 12 months to grant accounting and awareness of how those impact not just on the annual financial statements but also on the budget, and we've made some significant improvements to the accounting treatment for unspent grants as well. So very confident that under Peter's CFO leadership that that's been well taken care of, and Peter and his team are currently in the process of developing a comprehensive report that links in our grant income with our capital expenditure statements, so that when council are looking at our CapEx programs, you can also see what grant funding is sitting underneath that to support it.
Cool. Thanks, Claire. That's all I've got. Members, are you happy with that?
Yeah, happy.
Right, so we don't have anything else except thank you and your team for the job that you've done, and we're very happy with the results you found. So thanks again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Whiteford. I hope you enjoyed the night.
Bloody marvellous weather up here, mate. All right.
I'm actually up in the garage next week for a couple of days here from that Indigenous organisation. So I look forward to getting treated with the glory of the weather.
No worries, mate. We'll catch up. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
Bye.
Right, folks. That's great. Well done, team. So we'll just move back to page 10 of the agenda. And I'll move on to page 11 and just read the disclaimer that members of the public are cautioned against taking any action on council decisions on items on this evening's agenda in which they may have an interest until formal notification and writing by the town has been received. Decisions made at this meeting can be revoked pursuant to the Local Government Act 1995. Right, let's move on to business. Page 12. Item 10, reports of the officers. 10.1, development services have provided us with item 10.1.1. Port Hedland Visitor Centre, financial quarterly review for the first quarter being July to September 2014. With the recommendation down there that the Audit and Finance Committee received the, number one, received the financial report from FORM, Contemporary Arts and Crafts for the management of Port Hedland Visitor Centre of the first quarter being July to September. Number two, recommend to Council to approve to extend the current contract with FORM for an additional term of up to 2 years, subject to agreeable management fee negotiations carried out by the CEO or his delegated officer, provided the town gives form written notice of its intention to put into effect the initial extension at least 3 months prior to the expiry of the initial contract term as per current contractual terms, subject to successful negotiation of the management of all activities associated with the cruise ship visits. You only need a simple majority. Are there any points of clarification?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Yes.
Yes, just wondering, obviously just wanting a definition of subject to agreeable management fee negotiations and what sort of increase that might entail.
Victor?
Through the Chair, my understanding and intention of that part of the recommendation is to commence those negotiations through the CEO, and then the CEO will refer to the future report back to Council and virtually bring that management group to what the negotiations are. It particularly really is focusing on the cruise ship visits. I know that was an item that was identified as part of the original contract, but because of the way the contract was initially worded, I guess the management of those cruise ship visits were disputed, so we're trying to bring that back into it.
I guess I'm just more thinking like is agreeable like a CPI increase, or I just sort of wonder with the management fee negotiations that they are quite high already and how much further they'll continue to go up.
Through the Chair, it's my understanding that we're not intended to actually increase them dramatically. If it gives the committee a bit of confidence, we can reword it to reflect subject to CPI increase.
So
I think generally CPI with an almost separate allowance for incorporating the cruise ship activities.
Yeah, so that's the second part of the component, yeah. So at the moment, I think we budget somewhere about $5,000, per cruise ship visit, and it'd be something like that that we'd actually try to negotiate as part of that contractual arrangement as well.
Somewhere
in the order of that now.
Yeah.
To make sure that all the costs associated with the mission is there are the right results.
Chair, the only exception to that would be direct costs incurred by the town for things like lead collection and so forth, where it might be in kind and our team needs only to charge their time and time.
So, Madam Mayor, did you want to need that recommendation to reflect that? Do we need to give you like a little bit more comfort?
Well, I just think it needs, it needs to come back to someone, whether it be the Audit and Finance, whether it comes back to Council. I guess I'd like to see the KPIs going forward as well. And certainly there's always been a desire to have a community reference group, and that's never come out in the 2.5 years of the current contract. And I guess that's where incorporation of the cruise ship business is good, but I think a continued focus on startup support for new tourism product, and even a push towards new Indigenous tourism product, and particularly in terms of a Port Hedland promotional piece or campaign, I think they should be focusing and guiding towards focusing on that.
Sure. So to address those issues, item two is pretty long as it is. But could it be subject to, so if you take the second to last line item as part of the recommendation, subject to successful negotiations of the following, and if you manage of cruise ship visits as part of
it. And we include key focus areas as part of the words, and then you can say cruise ship visits.
KPIs, the inclusion of KPIs, provision of a community reference group, and promotion.
Product development
focus
around
on Indigenous tourism and a Port Hedland promotion campaign.
And to give the committee confidence, Councillors 5, 3, 4, C, and bring that back to Councillors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a recommendation to present that. Yeah. Of forms response to those.
Yeah, I just don't feel with this that we haven't given any thought of what we'd like to see going forward. So it's important that we provide some base on that.
Other points of clarification, Bill? Anyone?
Bill? No, through the chair, I was just questioning the additions there. Is that something that a finance and audit committee sort of we preside over and sort of vote on, or is that something that the council separately takes on board? Because we're introducing, well, this is my opinion, we're introducing things for, or activities rather than focusing on finance and audit issues. That was my only question.
Appreciate that, but it's sprayed into the area of looking at a contract.
Yeah, it's part of their contract to deliver those bills.
It's great.
Fair enough.
Any other points of clarification?
No.
I'll put a couple that really just send us around some of what Kelly has just said, but I guess I just wondered if they could provide create some value to increase their membership quota that they're trying to have. They're only targeting 48% of their own guests, 48% of their membership target, which is on page 14. And I also thought on page 15 there should be more product development as part of their contract, including Indigenous camping, tours, experience, overnight like stays, whatever. And then I asked the question whether they mentioned here that the Port Hedland International Airport coordination, and they talked about a booth there. So I wondered if they could advise the progress, the status. I know it says budget yet to permit, but perhaps they could build that into their key focus areas. I have a couple of questions. I don't know whether you can answer them, maybe, but questions around their reporting that I just wanted them to give some feedback on. I guess the understanding in two key areas I believe have contributed to their net profit line that we're reporting currently, and I see that as being in the program now. You know, where they're going to spend about $21,000, and they've only spent a quarter of their area. So I wanted to understand, is their budget financial year or calendar year? How did that support? Okay, that's okay, that's what I needed to understand. That's fine. Cool. No worries, that's fine. Then would those keep focus areas? Marivate, would you like to have a look at the recommendation there and feel comfortable? I can't see it. I can't read it either, so can you make it a little bit bigger and then scroll back up, thanks. So one stays as is, item one stays as is. Item two just changes to recommend to council to approve to extend the current contract with Forms for an additional term of up to 2 years, subject to agreeable management, fee negotiations carried out by the CEO or its delegated officer, and provided the town gives formal written notice of its intention to put into effect the initial extension at least 3 months prior to the expiry of the initial contract term, as per current contractual terms, subject is successful negotiations of the following. Oh, is that all that changed down the bottom? Sorry. Management of all activities associated with the cruise ship visits, performance indicators around community reference groups and Indigenous tourism products. Did you want to?
And just the Port Hedland promotional campaign.
So what will the report be on? Because will it be, depends if it's going to the Audit and Finance and Council?
Recommendation on the new contract.
Okay.
So we're not actually opposed to the contract, we just wanted clarification on those key focus areas down the front. What do you think the successful negotiations of the following?
No, 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 no
first quarter report. The recommendation is there in three parts. I'm not going to read it all if you don't mind. If there's any questions relating to that, are there any points of clarification?
I think there's a couple of typos there.
Yes, I had a couple.
So it's 14, April 14 and July 14 rather than 2013. The other, we'll need to vote on that first.
So, no, that's item one. You're saying the item, where's the correction?
Item one, so April 2014 it should be, and then item two, July 2014. So,
page
27,
item one, they've got April 2014, the recommendation, so that should be 2014.
Just
I would like to, I've got a point of clarification here is, I guess, highlight the council that the current reported budget position for the town's leisure facilities need close inspection and a strategy to be implemented on how the variance of the reported $210,000 will be reduced and accounted for over the next period. I just see that we need to sort of, part of what we need to do is ensure that somebody's attending to that. A strategy, you know, what strategy will be implemented to attend to that and how. So do we need to...
Through the chair, the role of the manager of recreational services is obviously to manage these contracts. Contractually, short of the town actually causing frustration of that contract or causing the YMCA to incur additional costs, the responsibility for the deficit remains with the YMCA. We've certainly received no correspondence from YMCA to date to suggest that their current budget versus actual position is in any way caused by actions of the town. So at this point in time, that's their risk. So there's nothing relating to facility malfunction as yet. We can certainly ensure that our manager of recreation continues to be in close contact with the YMCA and make sure that there are no surprise issues coming out there.
I feel just uncomfortable that the officer recommends that we accept these without some follow-up as to the actual financial position of this. I mean, so if I look at the recommendation, there is a recommendation to accept a report, and yet it's glaringly obvious that there are deficits. So should that position, that officer's position, not address some of that and say, well, we understand that that is going, and these might be the strategies that would happen, give us more comfort as an audit and
I take your point. I think through the chair, though, am I reading correctly or hearing correctly that this $211,000, let's call it the variance, does not come back to the town of Port Hedland? So they can lose $1 million. It's up to, as long as the town of Port Hedland's systems and infrastructure is working properly, that hasn't caused them to lose any of that money, they can go and do whatever they like. So it's a zero.
As far as the town, but that's right. What does happen is it does. The facility is a town-owned facility.
Yep.
And then there is a net effect in services if there are issues. Public relations is, like we understand, have a look at Markey Park and Shack didn't open. It really didn't have a lot of bearing on the town, but the public perception is that it is. So we can't allow them to just massively create deficits and not think that we shouldn't have our officers suggesting that we need to find a strategy.
Yes.
Through the chair, there is contractually, obviously, the town has protections in place around its exposure to any deficit run by the YMCA or a much larger organisation managing a range of recreational and other facilities. However, I guess it's reiterating that point that Councillor Jacobs made in terms of community perception, regardless of the fact that the town's contracted out that facility management, when things go wrong, it seems to be the town's reputation that ends up at stake. So I guess managing the risk around, any risk that our service levels may have to reduce. What if we were to have potentially a point four that seeks a report back or a follow-up on how the YMCA plans to address its current budget deficit. Noting that they haven't made any contact with the town, there could well be seasonal fluctuations that would make it normal for the expenditure patterns to be relatively stable, but the income to be significantly down. And one of those examples that I would suggest would be your peak swimming period times where your bulk of income from swimming pools is going to come in across this time of year. Not necessarily in the first quarter. So, I suggest we have a follow-up, maybe perfectly reasonable explanations.
Chair, on page 3 of the attachment to the item 2.1, there is a paragraph in that report, 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs down, which does comment on the 210k budget target. So that's that report.
Page three,
and the four pension legal executive summary. Four paragraphs down, just states that the four pension business unit financially is 210k behind the budget target.
What about an action plan to address deficit position?
Thank you, Bill.
You're
not just here for your good looks, mate.
No, I'm not here for those, I'll give you the tip.
Don't undersell yourself. Are we comfortable with that?
Good.
Bill, you moving that?
I'll move it.
Thank you. And Kelly is seconded. Well, any against? 3-0, thank you.
Just through the chair, probably one other question. I don't know what the relevance is, but I mean, what's the other alternative here? YMCA, we just contract it out to another body. That's the other alternative.
That would be the other alternative if something was to happen, or potentially those services come back to the house. Obviously, a significant process like that is likely to have some impact on the ability to deliver services for the community and incredibly popular services. So we would ensure that any renewal of contract or tender exploring alternative options needs to be very well planned and with significant lead time so that we can make that transition as seamless as possible for our community.
So just another question on from that. There is a budgeted, we have a budgeted that there is a deficit in running these facilities. So the town understands that there's a deficit in its budget. It's a line budgeted item, but you know, they can't come back every year and say this contract needs to be, you know, pumped up by X number of percentages just to keep amassing their deficit.
In the reports or what's made public, do we actually, because if I was a member of the public and I saw, you know, geez, it's a $211,000 deficit for the quarter, is there something there that we, you know, a one-liner to say, you know, this is YMCA's deficit and it has no impact on the profit and loss of the Battleport Headland?
Through the chair, these financials are YMCA's financials, not the town's. They're contractually obliged to report on these to to us, but we do clearly distinguish it as being much like the form ones. This is essentially the same as form in the previous item. We've contracted out the service management tourism facilities, and we've contracted out management break facilities, and those financials are presented on their letterhead. I suppose it's just a risk management mechanism that these are reported to the Audit and Finance Committee to provide a degree of oversight.
Okay, so taking that, through the chair, taking that one step further, I guess. So from a 30 June perspective, do we, and you know, I haven't gone through every single page of the financial report, but do we then isolate to say the leisure centre, South Headland Leisure Centre, the three sort of this is the income, this was the expenditure, this was the deficit or surplus position. Do we isolate that I'm coming back to what a member of the public sees and what the perception that is, because it's in the balance sheet or the profit and loss of the town of Port Hedland if it's isolated like that, and it shows a loss. In this particular case, it shows a loss, and the perception is that where the town of Port Hedland is picking up that tab, so to speak.
Through the chair, we are picking up a tab, which is right. The contract management fee, and that's disclosed in our financial statements as materials and contracts in that line item in our financial statements, and then again where we report by program, it's shown as the town's cost of delivering recreational services, for delivering those rec services. The YMCA's book figures do not enter our books at all. So what you'll see in our accounts is monthly contractor payments across to YMCA. We don't separate out the income or expenditure, that all those revenue streams are diverted to the contractor as part of that managed service.
That's fine.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Claire. All right, let's move on to page 67, item 10.2.2, GP Housing Quarterly Review, quarter 1, July to September 2014. With the officer's recommendation below that the Audit and Finance Committee received the first quarter report 1 July to the 30th September 2014 for GP Housing Quarterly and the Medical Centre, the OHS Group and Connected Health. Are there any points of clarification? No mover. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kelly. None against. 3-0. Okay, page 74, item 10.2.3, Courthouse Gallery Quarterly Review, July to September 2014. With the recommendation that the Audit and Finance Committee received the first quarter report 1st July to 30th September 2014 for the Courthouse Gallery from Form Contemporary Craft and Design. Are there any points of clarification? Now the mover to accept that report.
I'll move.
Kelly, thank you, Bill. Seconded. Any against? So moved. 3-6. Okay, page 105, 10.3, Corporate Services. According to us, item 10.3.1, report to the Audit Committee for the year ended 30th June 2014 and annual meeting with the Auditor. With the recommendation that the Audit and Finance Committee note the report to the Audit Committee for the year ended 30th June 2014, with particular references to the key finding analysis on page 4 and 5 and the key issues identified on page 15 to 17. Are there any points of clarification? With none being there, can we move it? Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kelly. Those against? 3-6. Thank you. Page 129, item 10.3.2, request for tender, provision of water services to the town of Port Hedland, 2014 to 2019. with the officer's recommendation that the Audit and Finance Committee 1 recommend to the Council that the Town of Warbeddon undertake a request for tender process pursuant to Part 4 of the Local Government Functions and General Regulations 1996 to appoint an auditor for a period of 5-year term commencing in 2014-15 financial year and terminating following the 2018-19 final audit. And item 2, to endorse the request for the tender document RFT number 1420, Provision of Audit Services 2014-2019, Town of Warbeddon, inclusive of the tender specifications and qualitative criteria. Are there any points of clarification?
I'm just wondering why it's 5 years, not 3, or another length of time.
Through the chair, the regulations allow for a maximum 5-year term. In our experience, and feel free to comment here, having a decent length audit tenure allows the auditors to know the organisation intimately. It stops that burn of introducing a new auditor into the organisation every 3 years. And it actually allows them, as they go through their annual audit process, to actually build up a real process improvement over the 5 years. That continuity, in my professional opinion, is really important.
And through the chair, just in support of that, in the audit specs, we've actually included an increased audit scope for the auditor to actually review budget documents and monthly financial statements, and this is our key financial health indicators with a view of identifying any adverse trends as well. So really actually looking at maximising that relationship with the auditor over a longer period.
Thanks, Greg.
And does the new scope include more of the control mechanisms that we were talking about before with Shane?
Through the chair, yes, it does. It has included the requirement for the financial management review. The last one was done in 2012, so we're doing it in 2016. In addition to that, with changes to the Local Government Board of Regulations, the CEO is required to undertake a review of, I guess, governance and risk management controls every 2 years, and so we'll be extending that process at the end of this calendar year.
Just the capturing of risk and that risk, does it include risk considerations?
Yeah, so we're through the chair, we're looking at actually developing the scope for that risk management audit. A couple of factors that we'll look at will be procurement and I guess a probity review and the robustness of our procurement practices and policies and procedures, also looking at business continuity and those kinds of things.
So
will be very extensive.
That will be in this, or that's going to be a separate document?
That will be separate.
Just a further point of clarification on that, if I may, through the chair. In terms of maintaining auditor independence for the external audit, it's really important that the auditor isn't put in a position of reviewing or auditing their own work. So we need to be quite clear around the separation between those two distinct activities so that we can be sure that when the auditors give us clearance on our financial statements, that it's a truly independent perspective.
Okay. Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
Thank you. So may I have a mover for that?
Yep.
Thank you, Bill. And second, Kelly. Is your name plenty more times than you'll think of. Okay, page 132. Item 10.3.3, sorry, I didn't put that to a vote, all passed 3-0, thank you. Okay, 10.3.3, 2014-15 quarterly budget review and statement of financial activity for the period ended 30th September 2014, with the officer's recommendation appearing in several points, 1-6. Would you like me to read the meeting like me to read all the recommendations? I guess the main one would be to note that there was an unfavourable result in item 3, but it's all within context. So are there any points of clarification? Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Bill. Those against? No. So, 3-0, thank you. Well done, folks. Good recommendation, by the way. Okay, and then proposed 176. And we move to item 11, which is late items as permitted by the presiding member of the committee. So we're on item 11.1 here, and we might just hold for a minute to read it. So we move to the suspending orders and to allow members to consider item 11.1 and then we'll come back. Can I have a minute for that? Thanks, Kelly. Thanks, Bill. 3-0.
We'll be done with the match fixing.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you, Bill. All in favour? 3-0. done. Colin Matheson Clubhouse Financial Report for Henry Rovers Football Club. Madam Mayor, do we have a motion to table this, or did you have some other consideration?
I'm happy to table it. I'm happy to consider it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we will move to consider the item with the recommendation that the Audit and Finance Committee receive the financial report 1 April through to 31 October 2014. Report for the operation of the Colin Matheson Clubhouse is presented by Port Hedland Rovers Football Club. Are there any points of clarification? Madam Mayor, you have.
Well, just wondering going forward, I guess just more how we're going forward with the new agreement and going forward so there is better utilisation of the facility. It's very, very, very underutilised, so how do we go forward with that?
Sure, the Chair, my understanding is that Major Recreation Services underground for has been concessions. So it's one of those things that we can
What happens if, maybe should there be a report back to look at our options going forward and then they then consider whether we publicly advertise it, put it out? Because we've been going through a trial arrangement and the trial arrangement was extended, but I think we need to put something out. And maybe it's a bit like the auditor services. If you give people a longer term lease, then people might be able
I guess relating to the management period, which expired in December 2013, and I guess I'm asking the question, the town has commenced negotiations, which commenced this week on the 17th of November 2014. My first observation or point of clarification is, why did we not do this earlier? The lease ran out on the 31st of December 2013. Is there a process that says that that should be considered closer to the date rather than a new revolving?
Chair, I'm going to take that on notice that ordinarily you would actually commence discussions all soon.
It's my understanding that there's always a view that the Rovers would then fall under the new community leasing policy, which has only recently been adopted. So probably my understanding limited intention to any new form of management agreement because they would fall under that community leasing policy now that it's been adopted. The detail of individuals happening with facility occupiers?
I'm not sure if that's correct, but it's waiting for the community leasing policy or the money that doesn't matter. That's why it didn't happen.
Thanks. And my second point of clarification is wondering whether we can actually, sorry, clarification is more an alternative recommendation to include a part two that says that simply they follow up on what Kelly just mentioned about.
Shouldn't it go to council? Like, I think really it should go to council to look at our options now, given the time.
And perhaps there'd be a report back to how the deficit will be intended to. Is this council's deficit?
My understanding of the way the arrangement operates is that there is almost this shared revenue of from higher fees up to a maximum of $45,000. Just from looking at the numbers, that's never going to provide a return to council or all recreational facilities. Obviously, the town runs them for a reason. So, regardless of whether I guess there was a shared arrangement or not, otherwise, the town's always going to request some energy back.
So, are we exposed to if that's
May I suggest that options for management of the corners management
and better utilisation.
December 22nd, returning 5th of January.
Thank you. And I have a period between the 18th of December and the 17th of January 2015. So may I have a mover to
clarification. In relation to this committee, yes. The next committee meeting is not scheduled to happen until the 18th of February. Leave of absence that you're applying for here is only relevant to this committee.
Yes.
So we might just make sure that we're not thinking we're getting council leave of absence.
Yes. So it only really applies to elected members. I will notify you that if there are applications for leave of absences made in committee, that are only relevant to the committee and not to council. Okay. So can I have a move to accept those? Bill, and that would be a vote of 3-4. Okay, item 15, closure. The date of next meeting, 15.1, which has just been advised, is the 18th of February in 2015. So with that having been said, I wish those committee members who we won't see again until the new year a very Merry Christmas, and I'd like to once again reiterate our thanks and our commendation for the corporate team for the wonderful job that they've done in producing the financials for the period to 2014. And at this stage too, it is also one of our directors' last meeting on the Audit and Finance Committee. So I take this opportunity to bid farewell to Claire Fiddle. Thank you for the role you've played within the organisation that is known as Patara Port Evelyn, because you have made a vast improvement and difference to the processes, the policies and the operations of the Corporate Services Department. So I wish you well in your future endeavours. I'm sure that no matter where you will go, you will have an impact. And I'm sure that the Lord will fare thee well and look after you and your kids. So thank you very much for your effort. We really do appreciate it. And on behalf of the, as the new presiding member of the Audit and Finance Committee, I wish you well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. I would also give you an opportunity to say thank you to us if you like.
A number of these opportunities over the coming days, but in the setting of the Audit and Finance Committee, I would like to convey my sincere thanks to Peter and the finance team. A number of our senior accountants are here with us today who have done a phenomenal job over the last 12 months. We've been through an enormous amount of change and some amazing improvements, and when I look back at what this group of people has achieved over the last 12 months, couldn't be prouder of the finance team when you consider where we started and where we've got to. It's been amazing, and I know at times that quite a stressful and tough journey, but we've all survived to look back, and we should be enormously proud of what we've achieved in the last 10 months. So well done to all of you.
Okay, now I'm sure there'll be partaking of presentations later on when you leave formally clear. So we'll move to closure 15.2, and there being no further business, I close the meeting at 1:30 p.m.